Now let us turn to the passage that we read together in Genesis chapter 35, and we shall read in the first verse just simply these words which God addressed to Jacob: "Arise and go up to Bethel." Now it is something which is to be recommended strongly, that stories in the Old Testament, like the life of Jacob, are well worth knowing, because there is so much in the life of Jacob that applies to the Christian life. And we're going to look at such a thing tonight. He says to Jacob, go and dwell in, go up to Bethel and dwell there. Now that would suggest on surface reading that he was meant to just make his home there permanently. But that was not the meaning of the word dwell there. It had a very specific meaning, referring back to when he was at Bethel in the first place. Now, the shape of the life of Jacob is, although there are many complications in it, the shape of his life is really quite easy. First of all, there is his journey outwards after the fallout with Esau, the journey outwards to Paddan Aram, and in the midst of that journey, he had the vision in Bethel, where he saw the ladder up to heaven and the angels ascending and descending. And then he spends 20 years in Paddan Aram with his uncle Laban. And after the 20 years, God says to him that he has to go back to his own land. And he heads back. And a number of things happened just in that time when he was entering again into the promised land. So it's just simply a journey out and a journey back, and certain things happening in between. So God says to him, dwell in Bethel. Not permanently, but long enough for an unhurried completion of some important business that Jacob had with God. It was to do with Jacob's failure to fulfill a vow which he had made on the way out in Bethel. When he was there, he was fleeing from Esau because Esau was out to kill him, and he had no time to spend and to fulfill any vow in that place at that time. So he, instead of fulfilling the vow which he made there and then, he had to go and keep going. But the vow was still upon him. And that is what the problem was here. Jacob's failure to fulfill that vow. Now we'll look at that vow itself later on. But I want us just to say a few words concerning what the Bible says about vows. Now, is it important to know what the Bible teaching on vows is? I believe it is. because it is very easy for us to make vows and then after some years to forget them. So what does the Bible teach concerning vows? We don't have much in the New Testament. In Acts chapter 18, verse 18, we read that Paul had shaved his head because he had made a vow. And that would have been the Nazarite vow, which we have described to us in Numbers chapter 6. And the very clear thing, and perhaps surprising thing, about the ritual of the Nazarite vow was that there was no command of God. And that's the first question we have to face. Does God command us to make certain vows? Now, if you go through the Bible, you will find a lot of teaching on vows, but in every case, it is the believer who makes the vows, not in obedience to God, but out of love and regard and desire for God. The Nazarite vow, there is no command there. You will see that very clearly. So why would anyone take on this vow and take it on as something which God sees and which he does before God? Why would he do it? Why would anyone do that when there was no command, no compulsion to do it? Now, when we come to Numbers 30, we have there fairly comprehensive teaching about vows. Again, you see the same thing, that vows are taken voluntarily. They are not initiated by God. But once they are made, once a person has made a vow, he makes it before God. That's what makes it a vow. He must then keep it. He is not free of that vow until he fulfills it. Even although it is voluntary, God takes note of it and God looks for its fulfillment. So vows, although they are voluntary, they are nevertheless important to God, because God remembers them. Even when we forget them, and sometimes we do, and even Jacob, who forgot all about his vow, God did not forget. And that's one thing we must remember. So, it is better, it says in number 6, not to vow at all than to vow and not keep that vow. Now that's the shape of the thing, and that's why vows are important to God. Not because they are something which he commands, but something which is undertaken, usually out of a desire to express their love to God, to express their separation from the world unto God, and to please God, to express their love to him. So, that is the only reason. No other reason, no compulsion. These vows are taken simply out of a regard for God, and a love for God. Getting closer to God, forwarding the work of sanctification. So that's generally the teaching. Now let's move on to Jacob. And we move on to what is Jacob's first encounter with God. Now, in the life story of Jacob, we have a tremendously important fact running through it. And that is the line, the covenant line, the line of the Messiah. The line which in the end is going to lead to the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ into the world. So it is important from that point of view. And the truth is really that the hand of God was on Jacob from the womb. Because it was revealed to say to his mother in the womb that the elder would serve the younger. That the younger Jacob would be the one through whom the blessing was going to come. And the first really significant spiritual matter that we find in the life of Jacob is the experience at Bethel. He is this poor figure of a man, fleeing from his brother, with nothing but his staff in his hand. And we find him, this seemingly forsaken figure at Bethel, with a stone for his pillow. And he has the most amazing experience. He dreams, and he sees a dream, the ladder which is Christ. And that Christ has the connection between earth and heaven, and the communication up and down between earth and heaven through Jesus Christ, who was to come. So he sees that ladder. That was his first encounter with God, as far as we know. There is nothing else written about it. But then when we look back on that in Genesis chapter 28, we will read there something about this vow which he took. In chapter 28 and verse 15, God says to Jacob, "Behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land. For I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of." Then reading again in verse 22, that's of chapter 28 still, it says, "And Jacob vowed a vow, say, if God will be with me." Now that's not the best translation there. The "if" is more like saying. God has already promised him that he is going to be with him. And it would be surely wrong of him to say "if." It is more like saying, "God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace. Then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone, which I have set up for a pillar, shall be God's house, and of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth to thee. So, here is Jacob making that vow, but unable to worship God there and then, because he was a fugitive. He had to keep going. But that is not to say that that vow was forgotten. That vow was upon him from the moment he made it. And, of course, all that took place between then and the time when he was on his way back, the story of all his experiences with Laban. Now, whatever we say about Jacob, one thing about this man is that he was not lazy. He was far from being lazy. He was a very progressive man and a very resourceful person and a hard worker. And, of course, he became very prosperous. But he says here, this stone shall be God's house. That meant that he would build an altar there, a place where God could be worshipped and where he would, by doing so, fulfill his vow. No time now, but yes, I have vowed, I will keep my vow. It was fresh in his mind. So thirdly, we're going to look at the cost of success in the life of the believer. The cost of worldly success in the life of the believer. Now, what happened to Jacob was really quite typical of what happens to many people in the Christian life. People who are industrious, people who are anything but lazy, people who build things up and who are successful in this life. And this is highlighted for us in the rebuke made to the church in Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2, which is, thou hast left thy first love. Not thou hast lost thy first love, but thou hast left thy first love. It often happens in the case of somebody who is busy, industrious, highly motivated, and driving on. Now, there is nothing fundamentally wrong with that, unless it means that we forget early days of our Christian lives. You know, these early days when everything was so absolutely clear, where we were filled with joy and gladness, and we very often made vows, and we were just wanting to be everything for God and for Christ. It used to be said, it's in Gaelic, about having to, it is good for us to sometimes visit these days, visit the days of early Christian life. And that's what, in a sense, Jacob had to do. He had to go back to that early Christian experience. And what a wonderful experience it was. in order that he might fulfill his vow. But here he was now, just rich, just incredibly rich. He really was. And God had asked him and told him to make his way back. But his industriousness and his material success had caused something to happen. He had left his first love. He had left that dream which he was given at Bethel. He had left it behind. And the most important thing to him, for him and his future, he forgot. It faded into the past. This vow which he had made to God. So it is sometimes with us. God had kept Jacob beyond every possible expectation, kept him and enriched him until he became very wealthy. But all was not well between him and God. Things had got in the way. How would one describe Jacob? Maybe as somebody who was outwardly following the flock, contributing and supportive in all these things, supporting the church in every way. But over the years, if there has been success, that there is a great danger. A change occurs, not overnight, but slowly, bit by bit. He doesn't see it. Others don't see it. Everything looks outwardly fine. The amazing thing is that God had revealed himself wonderfully, spectacularly in the dream that he had at Bethel. And then noticed on his way back, there were all these amazing things that happened to him. First of all, there was that amazing reception. We think of modern reception, heads of state, meeting one another, receiving one another, and banquets and all these things. These are nothing. Nothing like the reception that Jacob got when he crossed over back into the promised land. The angels of God met him. What a reception. Then there is the wrestling at Peniel. We believe with a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ, a man. What an experience that itself was. Then there's another, which is something else, which was a miracle. And that is that Esau's anger had all subsided. The way back for Jacob had been opened up and opened up completely. And there was everything good, everything seemed to be going well. the amazing prosperity since the time of his vow. Incredible wealth. But there was the cost of that success. No thought of his early commitment. No thought of his vow. Remember what we said about vows? Voluntarily made, not made in obedience to God's command, because God does not command these vows. They are taken voluntarily. As Jacob's vow that he made, it was made voluntarily. And he forgot. Over the years, that seemed to go so far away. But God did not forget. And that is what we must remember. If we, at one time, made a vow to God, promised him and ourselves that we were going to be all for him, and then there is success, and fundamentally there is nothing wrong with success. I'm not suggesting that at all. But there is the danger of success. He had lost track of his early commitment. He had forgotten his vow. He was not looking back. He was not doing what we sometimes are told to do, going and visiting these days, the days of early Christian life. So, why did Jacob make this vow at Peniel, at Bethel, I should say? He made that vow because he had this desire to please God. I will set up in this place not just a stone, but I will set up an altar. This place shall be Bethel, the house of God. This place shall be a place of worship. That was his vow. Sometimes God takes us to some place where we face reality. So, why would God say to Jacob, go and dwell in Bethel? He sometimes takes us to some point where we're exposed to the question, have I left my first love? Has the day of vows passed for me? Have I outgrown these, what we might call, childish things? Have we left our first love? So it was with Jacob. Now, 28 years later, this wasn't just immediately after he got back to Cana. But 7 years after coming back, and after having all these other experiences, God himself had to remind him of his vow. Go to Bethel. Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there, and make an altar unto God that appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Jacob. In other words, you made that vow. You have forgotten it. Now, you go and fulfill that vow. Because although you have forgotten that vow, God says, I have not forgotten it. So, have we left our first love? Or is there a forgotten vow that God is waiting for us to fulfill? Have we left our first love, as Jacob seems to have done? So the command is, arise and go up to Bethel, dwell there, and fulfill your vow. Make that a place of worship, as you vowed to do 27 years ago. And there is, of course, here all the weights, putting aside all these other idols. It's incredible, isn't it, that these idols would have been in Jacob's household at all. And all these ornaments, the weights, the trappings, the ornaments of prosperity, indicating worldly things. Perhaps laying aside strange gods, things which have crept in, which we have, without realizing it, have given too high a place. Laying aside these things, symbolic of cleansing the life and cleansing the soul. What was the aim? Self-righteousness, so that he would feel better about himself? No. But humiliation. Yes, it was humiliating for Jacob. When God said to him, go up to Bethel and make there an altar. I'm sure of anything. It would come bang into his mind. My vow. All these 27 years ago. Humbling. And it is humbling if we find ourselves with vows which we made long ago and we have forgotten. Doesn't matter. You might say, well, these were childish vows. I don't think that's the way to look at it. But if you made these vows in your early Christian life, they are vows which should be fulfilled. The aim must be regaining that first love. Oh, how easy it goes. Sometimes it goes fearfully, fearfully wrong. I was once told in my very early Christian life, and told this person that I had been converted. And this person says to me, and this is exactly the words, make the most of it, because you'll get very hard. What a disaster. Did it happen suddenly? No. It happened slowly, imperceptibly. Satan is subtle and he is clever. Let us, my friends, all of us, including myself, seek for any vows that I have made, that I might keep them. Because God does not forget vows. He doesn't command them, but they are important to him. He does not forget them. Let us seek to regain our first love. May the Lord bless to us these few thoughts. Let us pray.